President Joe Biden had a lot to prove this week, to put it mildly. And the place where the rubber met the road was on Thursday at his NATO press conference, where Biden spent a lot of time trying to convince us nosy-ass reporters that he can still beat Donald Trump and that he's healthy enough to finish a second term. More importantly, he basically told Democrats to get on board.
I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president. I beat him once, and I will beat him again.
How did Biden do? There will be a lot of talk about that over the next few days. I don't need to remind y'all about George Clooney asking him to drop out. Jim Himes, immediately after the press conference, saying the same, and Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi working behind the scenes to put some pressure on Biden to make a different decision. And all those Democrats in Congress who are already questioning Biden's fitness. That's not gonna stop. So, as we confront the non-zero chance that Biden might have to step aside, we've brought in an expert to answer all of your questions, all of mine, about how the Democrats would actually go about replacing Joe Biden at the upcoming Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
We've been doing this for a long, long time. And it's not a legal process, it's a party rules process.
Elaine Kmark is a longtime member of the DNC's Rules Committee, a scholar at Brookings, and a lecturer at Harvard's Kennedy School.
Well, let me first say I was Walter Mondale's delegate hunter in 1984. So there we are, a small fraternity, if you will, sorority of people who've done this for presidential campaigns.
She also is a 10-time DNC delegate and literally wrote the book on how primaries and conventions work. During our conversation, we got into everything from how and when Joe Biden would go about dropping out, if his delegates can rebel against him if he doesn't, whether or not he can choose his successor, how exactly an open convention would unfold in Chicago, and what she thinks the public's reaction will be if the Democratic nominee for president is chosen by a handful of party insiders in smoke-filled back rooms. I'm Eugene Daniels, and this is Playbook Deep Dive. Now, when people talk about you, they talk about you as the expert on conventions, right? So can you briefly just tell us what a contested convention would look like? Would it work where there's just like folks in the back rooms in around Chicago in the convention center picking and choosing? Walk people through what a contested convention nowadays would actually look like.
Yeah, we're way past that.
Yeah, just a little bit. Modern technology might make it easier.
Yeah, we're way past the smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah.
Mostly because there's no party bosses anymore.
Yeah.
But to have a contested convention, you need more than one candidate. Right, actually contesting the convention, mm-hmm. right? So if, for instance, President Biden decided not to run, and if more than two or more people decided that they would like to be the Democratic nominee, they would then engage in what Congressman Clyburn has called the mini primary.
Right, right.
They would visit states and visit state delegations. They pay a lot of attention to the big state delegations like California, New York, and Texas. They would certainly probably engage in a debate. I'm sure some news organizations would be happy to support debates.
Wherever they wanted. They could find a home if they wanted it, that's for sure.
If there's only one person, okay, if, for instance, Joe Biden got out and said, I endorse my vice president, Kamala Harris, and no one challenged her, well, then we don't have a contested convention.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you are the Biden campaign, right, this is a group of folks who are seeking a smooth transition. These are people who don't like chaos. Do you think, and this is a big thing considering what we know about Biden and where we are right now and how they're messaging, would you tell him to drop out before the convention and give the party time to kind of coalesce and get used to, you know, kind of a new nominee? Or do you wait until everyone's in Chicago and potentially avoid chaos and avoid that mini primary?
Well, I think if he was inclined to get out, he should do it as soon as possible.
Hmm.
Before the convention, so that the party can sort out who wants to run, for instance, And at this point, I don't think there's a lot of people who want to run. I think that if he wants to get out, he should do it soon and let the party come together around Vice President Harris or perhaps somebody else and do it in time for there to be a good convention. Remember that the convention planning is going on.
Yeah, right.
They're writing a platform. They're already choosing speakers for the convention, et cetera, et cetera. The divides within the Democratic Party over policy and stuff are not terribly deep.
Yeah.
Especially because the party is very united around defeating Trump. So it's not like you're going to have some huge ideological battle going on. It should be fairly easy for the party to come together if Biden decides he doesn't want to run again.
President Biden has basically all the delegates at this point.
He's got basically everybody.
He's basically everyone. To what extent do the delegates need to listen to his endorsement? There's almost no world in my mind that he would drop out and not endorse Vice President Harris, right? It helps to cement his legacy. She can get to the war chest easier. There's all these reasons why it makes sense for him to do that, right? Even though some in the party might not agree. Do the delegates need to listen to him? Can they just do whatever they want? Right? He can free them, but.
Well, he doesn't even have to free them.
Mm-hmm.
The minute he's not a candidate, they are officially uncommitted.
Hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, all of these delegates were chosen as delegates because they are enthusiastic and loyal Biden supporters.
Right.
So, of course, they would listen to what Joe Biden says. They would take very seriously Joe Biden's endorsement of his vice president or anyone else for that matter. I think a lot of these people would be very disappointed. I think they know many of them have met Biden over his many years in politics. They love the guy, but of course they'd listen to him. He would be the person they would listen to.
Yeah, and it's less messy for the party, which I think there's probably into November wants to be seen as the party of chaos and mess. I want you to walk with me through kind of this idea journey. So, let's say for whatever reason, for some crazy reason, President Biden does not endorse Harris, that he says, you know what? I'm so pissed off. I'm taking my toys and I'm going home. You people figure it out. Very unlikely. He's an elder statesman. He doesn't want that. But how does the process vary if he doesn't endorse anyone? If he just says, you guys do what you want, what happens then? It feels like everything has to happen in Chicago at that point.
Well, look, you'd have a run-up to Chicago, right? If people were very interested in running, they would start calling delegates. They'd be going to delegation meetings. They'd be trying to get to know the delegates. That's what they'd be doing. And they'd presumably participate in any activities that were promoted either by the DNC itself or by news organizations. It's not any big mystery. It's just that the target of their campaigning, instead of being the primary voters in this state or that state, the target would be these 4,000 plus delegates to the convention.
Do you have any concerns about that process being seen for voters as undemocratic?
Absolutely not. And this is a very important point.
Yeah.
Some of these delegates were actually elected on the same ballot that the presidential candidates ran on. Okay. Some states actually place the names of delegates on the ballot. In the states that don't do that, delegates were elected in open, well-publicized meetings after the primary. In other words, anybody who's a bona fide Democrat can sign up and register to run for delegate. And then you go to a congressional district caucus or a state convention or some gathering, and you bring with you as many friends as you possibly can, as many friends and neighbors. And that's why these delegates tend to be, local leaders of some sort or another. And as I say, this is true in the Republican Party as well.
Now, President Biden, because of some ballot rules in Ohio, is set to receive the nomination virtually before the convention. The deadline is August 7th. At some point, they will have done that. The idea is that they will have done that already.
Well, it's not clear. It's not clear that they're going to do that.
Is it clear that they need to do it, though?
That's why. It's not clear that they need to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Why? Because they're trying to evaluate whether or not they trust the Ohio legislature, which has a lot of MAGA types in it, mm-hmm. okay, on this issue of putting the Democratic nominee on the ballot. Let me say that this is pretty irrelevant, okay, because even if it happened, right, and there was an early virtual vote, and then for some reason Biden decided to drop out of the race, the delegates would meet in Chicago, and on the first night of the convention, they would adopt the rules. And they would adopt a rule saying we're going to have a roll call vote on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not rocket science. I mean, it's common sense. If he dropped out or something happened to him, God forbid, right? They would simply adopt a rule and have a roll call vote.
Yeah. If they do a virtual roll call vote, is that it, or does the DNC at the convention need to kind of reaffirm it in Chicago?
No, they don't. As long as he's in the race.
Probably a nightmare scenario for most Democrats. Maybe for yourself. What if Biden dropped out after the convention? Is there a fail-safe for that? Or something else were to happen?
No, there's a process for that. The full.
I love how you're so calm when I'm just the Democrats I'm talking to in D.C. are like pulling their hair out.
Well, you know, it's because people don't realize. Let me step back from that. The reason everybody tears their hair out is that people don't realize that the business of nominating a presidential candidate is ultimately party business. It's not governed by the government. There's no mention of parties in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And in both political parties in America, there's literally not just decades, but centuries, okay, of tradition and party rules about nominating presidents. We've been doing this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's not a legal process. It's a party rules process. So if Biden decided to drop out after the convention, the chairman of the Democratic Party would call the Democratic National Committee into session. The 400 plus members of the DNC would come to Washington or Chicago or somewhere, and they would vote for a new nominee. Would there be a lot of politicking about that? Probably. Or maybe they would just say, it's easier and safer to nominate the vice president.
Yeah.
So the DNC, though, has the legal authority to do that.
Mm-hmm. But if he drops out after the convention, what's the fail-safe? I guess walk me through how that would actually work.
Well, there's 435 members approximately mm-hmm. of the Democratic National Committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
We meet twice a year.
Yeah.
Okay, in meetings.
When's your next meeting?
The next meeting is for the Friday after the convention.
That's when it's
scheduled. So if he dropped out, let's say the following week or September 1, the chairman of the party would call the DNC members. Now remember, there's two DNCs, Democratic National Convention mm-hmm. and Democratic National Committee.
Yes,
it's so very confusing. They would call the National Committee people into a meeting, and they would decide who the nominee should be. We did this once before in 1972. George McGovern's vice presidential candidate, Tom Eagleton, dropped off the ticket, and they needed to replace him. McGovern wanted Sarge Shriver. Everybody said that was fine. But the DNC did have to meet and they did have to vote in order to legally make Sergeant Shriver the vice presidential candidate. So there is a provision for this. By the way, the Republican National Committee has the same process.
Yeah.
Okay. So if something happened to Donald Trump mm-hmm. after their convention, the Republican National Committee would meet and pick a new nominee.
Yeah. Probably his VP pick, right? Like that's the easiest.
Yeah, I mean, that's, There's nothing. It's not like the Constitution that says the vice president shall become the president.
Right, right.
There's no rules like that in either party. But for practical purposes, you could see that the VP candidate would probably have a lot going for him or her.
Yeah. And political ones for Harris, especially, right? Being seen as jumping over the first Black woman who's been vice president is one that people
that are. That would not be cool.
Yeah. Not going to fly.
It's not going to fly. No. Yeah. And going back to our earlier conversation, that's why I think there may not be a contested convention. In other words, I think a lot of people who have their eye on future, you know, presidential runs probably don't want to take on the first female African-American vice president.
Yeah.
I think that will go into the calculations of, Gretchen Whitmer or, any of the other people, all of them good, who get mentioned.
Yeah. We talked about how scared everyone is, right? And their hair is on fire about this because they don't understand it. They don't understand the rules and the process. So to me, it feels like they don't have the stomach to do that. Like the gumption and the gall to say, you know what? Let's just figure it out. We're going to come together and the 4,000 of us are just going to vote when we get there. We're going to meet on Monday and say what we're going to do the vote on Wednesday.
Well, I mean, I think you're hearing that from a lot of Democratic voters and, people like that. People who are elected delegates have been to conventions.
Yeah. Some of the lawmakers have been too, but they also are terrified because they don't seem to know the rules. They need to read your book, Elaine.
Yeah. They don't seem to know the rules.
Yeah.
But guess what? Someone will tell them.
Yeah.
It won't be a secret. There's nothing secret about this. It's on paper. The call to the convention was adopted literally 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That will have to be approved on Monday night of the convention. You'll have to want to not know it to not know it.
Right.
And,
at that point.
And people will know it. Yeah.
You'll be the most popular woman in America at that point. There's been a lot of conversation over whether or not President Biden's delegates have any room to maneuver if they are truly pledged. There's a specific rule that I want to talk to you about. It says, quote, delegates elected to the national convention pledged to a presidential candidate shall in all good conscience reflect the sentiments of those who elected them. What does that mean in practical terms?
In practical terms, it's a loophole.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a loophole. And you can think of many examples. For instance, and this is kind of amusing because it applies to the other party. What if your presidential candidate, after the primaries were over, was prosecuted and convicted of a felony?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some people might think, in all good conscience, they shouldn't be the nominee of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Republican Party doesn't think that or has no in all good conscience rule. So that doesn't apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
But, the example I usually use to think about that is that when John Edwards ran for president, people remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
They
remember the video of him looking at himself in the mirror, doing his makeup and his hair.
But what they probably also remember is that while he was conducting a presidential campaign, he was having an affair with his mistress, mm-hmm. got her pregnant, mm-hmm. set her up in a beach house in Malibu using campaign money. It was just a mess.
Scandal.
Now, he never got very far. So the story didn't break until much later in the year after the convention. But imagine if he had done well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he was sailing into the convention, sort of like Joe Biden with a couple thousand delegates, et cetera.
Yeah.
And the story broke. Well, you could imagine some people saying, in all good conscience, I'm voting for somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we don't really, because it hasn't really been used, and this rule has been on the books literally since the 1984 convention.
Yeah.
Since it's never been used, we don't really know what it means, but you can imagine it means something pretty serious.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like thinking the president has no chance of winning in November or that he's too old could also represent your good conscience, right? That it is so open-ended that, there could be a revolt of people being like, you know what? I do love him. Just like people on Capitol Hill, right? I love him. I've been a fan of his forever. I voted for him. But I can't in good conscience say that he should remain the person on the ticket. That seems like a possibility here, no?
It's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
Now, we are operating a little bit in the blind here because we don't really know. There hasn't been enough time to poll delegates.
Right.
Some states are still getting the names and addresses and emails of the delegates.
Just the month before?
They're putting the list together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So we don't really know who they are. There's been no reliable polls of them. You know, the journalists will find, you'll find four people that you know who actually are delegates and ask them. But we don't know what the delegates are thinking. My guess is they're doing exactly what a lot of Democrats are doing. They're trying to figure out how bad is this?
Yeah.
And what should I do?
Yeah.
We do have a month for people to figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that there's no time to kind of pull the delegates and really get this going, I guess, you know, our colleague Jonathan Martin reported that the Biden campaign had been calling delegates basically to kind of check their loyalty. If you're the Biden campaign or if you're advising the Biden campaign, why did you tell them to do that? Why are they doing this? Why are they calling these folks and double checking?
Because they're trying to see if they're sticking with the president.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. Pretty simple.
Same reason the Biden campaign is calling members of Congress or calling United States senators.
Yeah.
Right? You want to take their temperature, see where they are. This is a big deal. It's a lot of discussion. And you know, we're going to have a news conference tonight, which will, you know, be scrutinized. The most important group are these 4,000 delegates, which include, by the way, United States senators and U.S. and congressmen and governors, et cetera.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How seriously should we take the reports of delegates saying that there's a discussion happening about rules changes?
Well, I'm not sure what they would change. I don't know what that means. I mean, they already have a rule which allows them to vote their conscience on this.
Right.
The procedures for putting somebody's name in nomination are pretty straightforward and in effect and actually fairly small. You need 300 to 600 signatures of delegates on a petition to put your name in a roll call. So that's going on. I'm not sure what rules changes.
You don't know what the hell they're talking about when they say that.
Right.
I mean, why do you, I guess I'm just so curious. All of this information is somewhere, right? It is available to members of the committee and these delegates could probably get their hands on it. Why do you think there's such a gulf of information? It does feel like no one, you know, quote unquote, no one knows how these things would work. And they're saying it on air, people who are probably delegates, right? Members of Congress.
Well, because I think a lot of people are simply young enough that they can't remember the 1968 convention.
Right.
They can't remember when things were different.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people who just never saw this. As the experiences they've had is you go through a primary, somebody wins the primaries, and then these delegates go to the convention and they wear funny hats and they jump up and down and they cheer, right? But they don't see these people. They've never seen these people as decision makers.
Yeah, yeah. I think the most important part of that answer was you saying 35-year-olds are young, so I'm going to take that with me
to me, they are.
I appreciate it. I'll take it. So the delegates could amend the rules and turn on Biden, like a hostile takeover a la Succession. Like this,
they don't have to amend the rules. I mean, they just can not vote for him on the roll call vote. In other words, there's no need to amend the rules as they stand.
One thing, if Vice President Harris or someone who's not Joe Biden became the nominee, are they free to pick their own VP? You talked about the VP needing to be kind of confirmed and elected, I guess, as get the nomination at the actual convention. Would she be free to pick that person? Would the delegates pick that person?
No. She would be free to pick that person. subject to the fact that the delegates would have to vote on them.
So she needed to talk to them and say, ask who the hell they want. Yeah.
To find somebody who was broadly acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Your work is kind of pretty even-handed about the legacy of the current primary system versus kind of the past versions that we've had in this country. Basically, there's some good things, there's some bad things. If the Democratic Party, hell, if the Republican Party kind of went back to having open, contested conventions, like figuring it all out together as a party, letting the party decide, you know, having and letting the creating the big poobahs of the party once again, what would that legacy be?
Well, the one thing that, you know, there's would be good and bad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. See, even handed.
Yeah, there'd be good and bad things of it. One of the good things would be that you would have people, you would empower people who actually knew the candidates,
yeah,
and who actually knew what it took to govern and what their likelihood of being a successful president would be. It's what I've written about as an element of peer review. You'd have peer review in the nomination process. And that would probably help prevent candidates like Donald Trump, who certainly when he was elected first really had no idea what the job was. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy didn't know what the nuclear triad was, mm-hmm, which most voters don't know either, but the president of the United States better damn well know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he was clearly not ready to be president. I think this time it'll be, unfortunately for many, a different deal. And then the question would be sort of who decides, who gets in that room, who are they, et cetera. Clearly, in 1968, it was mostly white men. Mm-hmm. These days, however, just look at our party leadership. Right. It's heavily African American. It's equally divided between men and women. So I think we've done a good job there. But it's always a question of, you know, who's in the room? How do you get in the room? Are people cut out of the room, et cetera, et cetera? So you'd have fights over that as well. And people, and it could look undemocratic. It could actually be undemocratic.
I want to spend some time on the question of whether or not it would be seen to voters, right? Not that it like logistically is anti-democratic, but what your party especially has said for years is that we are a big tent. We listen to the voters. We go with the will of the voters, right? We don't subvert the will of the voters. It's one thing that you guys often say you have over President Donald Trump trying to overturn the will of the election in 2020, right? Right. Going with the will of the voters. If, you know, 400 or 4,000 people in the party, the elites, you know, people who've been elected, people who are connected, right? That's the view of delegates and members of the high echelons of the Democratic Party. It would feel, I think, to a lot of voters, and I've heard this, that this is anti-democratic. This is subverting the will of the Democratic voters because he won the primary.
Let's break this down a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
We regularly elect members of Congress, governors, senators, and we let them make big decisions on our behalf. In representative government is a quite legitimate form of government for the most important decisions in our lives. And we elect people because we think they're generally going to do what we agree with. So if you had a purely old-fashioned convention,
yeah,
you would be vesting in delegates the authority to make a decision on your behalf.
Yeah.
Okay. And when we did have these old fashioned conventions, nobody complained, right? They didn't see them as illegitimate. Now, my guess is that now that people are accustomed to voting in primaries,
right,
you could never go back. So the question would be, can you somehow create a system where, for instance, the elected officials, say in Congress, met with presidential candidates and gave them a vote of approval, right? And said, look, we think these three people are qualified to be president. We think this person who's been a pizza executive or been a spiritual advisor They have good points, but we really don't think they're qualified to be president. And they could convey that to the voters and let the voters decide, right? But it's giving them information that voters aren't really equipped to get. They don't know these people personally. So they know things, the quote, elites, by virtue of being in the game, they know things about these candidates that the average voter simply doesn't know.
But isn't in a world where we have all of this access, probably too much damn access to all the information, doesn't it feel like voters could find those things out, right? That's why we spend so much time and so much money voters doing campaigns.
Could find those things out. But they, come on, if you're a neurosurgeon, right, are you going to spend your time pouring through these papers to figure this out? No, of course not. You don't have the time. That's why we use political parties. They're shortcuts, right? For the shortcuts to have us, for us to understand government and what we want out of government. People just don't spend that amount of time on politics. I mean, the notion that you should go through every single law that a senator has passed before you vote for him. Come on, nobody's going to do that.
Nobody. Maybe me and you. Maybe me and you. But right. But that lack of time or that lack of interest in kind of vetting the candidates, that also means that most people don't understand this process that we're talking about, right? And so when they vote, right, in this primary system, they are voting in their minds for these representatives to do one thing, right? Vote for Joe Biden or vote for Bill Clinton, or vote for Barack Obama. Right. And so to them, they did the thing that they were told to do, and they elected the representatives. When people elect representatives to Congress, they know that they're electing them to make other types of decisions. People don't know that anymore.
Well, but here's the problem. For the primary system goes on over a long period of time, right? Starts in late January, early February, goes all the way to June. Yeah. Things change during that period of time. People's minds change. Certainly people's minds changed about John Edwards, okay, whether they wanted him to be their president, right? You know, people change. So voters who are voting one way in February may not think the same way in, you know, June or July. And so the convention, look at it as a sort of fail-safe. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the things that we have heard for years now is after Democrats chose Chicago was 1968. And before the, you know, there was the, this nothing like 1968. We are a calm party. Nothing's dramatic. That damn, that's gone. that's over. It is much more dramatic. And you've talked about how 1968, the anti-war movement, the convention fiasco changed the primary process.
Right.
It's not lost on anyone that this convention now, the location, the sentiment about the war in Gaza, what's happening right now with unease about President Biden atop the ticket, are making this DNC feel much more like Chicago. Maybe not, you maybe won't see these crazy protests, well, but it feels the uneasiness. So,
no.
But, you disagree.
Please okay, they disagree.
Free, feel free.
Yeah, it's the same city. Yeah. Okay.
you think I'm just a reporter just picking, trying to find something to write about?
Look, it's the same city.
Yeah.
But 1968, which I am old enough to remember. Okay.
You don't look it. You don't look it.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. 1968 exposed deep ideological schisms in the Democratic Party. We've gotten certainly a little bit better than we were back then, but they're still around. This is not, if this convention is, you know, an open convention, it will not be like 1968 because it's not over an issue. It's over a person. It's literally over a tragedy. Can this person actually run for office, and can this person actually govern anymore? That's not the sort of thing that people man the barricades for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just not like the anti-war movement or the civil rights movement.
Do you believe that Biden should stay on top of the ticket?
I'm not gonna say that right
I
now.
Had to ask you, Elaine. I had to see if you would do.
I'm not gonna say no.
last question before I let you go. What keeps you up at night?
What keeps me up at night is the threat from a Trump presidency. a Trump presidency plus control of the House and the Senate. I think that would allow for the worst instincts of Donald Trump's leadership style to become reality. A Trump presidency with a Democratic Congress, I'm less worried. I'm still worried about it, but less worried.
Yeah.
But the real worry is if Trump starts gaining and it threatens, he looks like he's going to have margins in the House and in the Senate that are big enough to allow him to do some of the really awful things he's talked about doing, that keeps me up at night.
Elaine K. Mark, thank you, thank you, thank you for coming on and educating us on something that we should have already been educated on. And maybe some of these members of Congress will listen to this and get all the answers that they don't seem to know when they go on television. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. It's nice to talk to you. You've got a great way about you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. This was so great. I'm so glad we did this.
We did it too. It's fun.
And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Tabor. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Eugene Daniels, Playbook co-author and host of this week's episode of Deep Dive. Ryan Lizza is our host and executive producer. Don't worry, he'll be back next week. Make sure to wish him a happy birthday. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.